Thanks very much for that invitation, for that introduction, and thanks for the invitation to be here today. It's a pleasure and an honour to be presenting at this conference. I think it's a worthwhile contribution to where we're heading. The movement towards next generation networks is happening all around the world. Don't think that we're on our own. Competition, whether it be through shared access in the incumbent's network or inter-platform competition, and that's a lot of the focus of the debate today, has been instrumental in driving that change. And the evolution has much to do with the strength of the competitive environment in each country. Development is occurring at different rates, and while each country has its own particular challenges, it's becoming apparent that there are common issues around the world. Today I'm going to focus on a bit of a background to the development of the communications industry in Australia, and then say something about the NBN process as a next step. I do have to note that the ACCC is an advisor to the expert panel, and we are subject to fairly strict probity requirements, and that's going to limit my ability today to be able to go into much in the way of getting into the more contentious issues. But I think it is important to at least start with an understanding of how the industry is developing and what the NBN process and network development offers in terms of building on that development. The lodgement of proposals last week as part of the government's NBN process is the latest step in the development of Australian telecommunications markets in just over a decade since major competition reforms were introduced in 1997. The original declared services included certain basic access services necessary for the carriage of inter-network voice and data calls over existing fixed and mobile networks. There were no access services such as the unconditioned local loop service or the line sharing service, which allowed access to Telstra's copper network so that companies could provide broadband and or voice services. In 1998, only 16% of Australian households had internet access. That's not long ago. And as you recall, it wasn't broadband. Then in 2004, with the help of a competition notice, I'd argue, against Telstra for alleged price squeeze, the emergence of strong competition in broadband offers meant that by 2006-07, internet access had increased to 64% of all Australian households. And by then, broadband internet services for households outstripped dial-up services by more than 2-to-1. By June 2008, this ratio has increased again. Among broadband technologies, DSL remains the dominant access technology. Almost 70% of all non-dial-up subscribers use DSL services. The provision of these DSL services has been encouraged by the availability of unbundled access to Telstra's copper network via the unconditioned local loop and line sharing services. Currently, around 1 million unbundled lines are in operation. At last count, about 20 ISPs had invested in electronic equipment to provide DSL services to consumers. Underlying this trend towards greater unbundled competition, the ACCC noted in a recent report there were 154 exchanges which contain five or more infrastructure providers. The use of unbundled services has enabled carriers to provide a variety of downstream products and compete more vigorously for retail customers. The faster broadband speeds that arrive with the offering of ADSL 2 Plus services in certain areas is one outcome of the large-scale use of unbundled lines. Some ISPs also appear to be widening their network coverage. For example, Macquarie Telecom recently announced an expansion of its business-grade ADSL 2 Plus network to 214 new exchanges. That's a six-fold increase on current numbers. FTEL has also recently announced plans to expand its footprint from 70 to 125 exchanges, and then to 200 exchanges and beyond as soon as possible. So it is capable of providing VDSL 2 and ADSL 2 Plus and PSTN services. These expansions suggest confidence in the ability to obtain a commercial return on infrastructure investments and follows Telstra's decision earlier this year to flick the switch on our ESL 2 Plus services in 900 additional exchanges. Another development in Australia, as in international markets, is that wireless broadband has become increasingly popular, and we've heard something about that already. The number of wireless broadband users in Australia increased 90% between December 2007 and 2008, June 2008. And one of the factors contributing to this growth is the use of wireless broadband services on mobile phones. This is why the investment plans of the major mobile providers continue to focus on improving coverage and speed in their networks. Australia now has 4 mobile network operators who provide, either directly or via wholesalers, over 21 million mobile services to Australian consumers and businesses. By contrast, in 1997, there were 3 licensed carriers with just over 4 million mobile services in operation, more than half of which were analogue services. In addition, mobile networks are no longer used just for providing voice calls, but increasing for email, internet access, downloading music and other data services. Smaller players are continuing improving their services, giving Australians a range of providers for mobile broadband coverage. I expect that in the next 18 months we're going to see further substantial evolution of this technology. Telsite forecasts mobile broadband usage to grow by 76% this year in Australia, given the expansion of networks and the release of handsets such as Apple iPhone and BlackBerry Bold. A question this is posing for regulators both here and nationally is to what extent mobile phones become a substitute for the traditional fixed line services. At this stage, our view is that various limitations with mobile services mean that it will not always be a substitute for fixed line services for consumers, particularly in relation to broadband services. And saying that, we recognise that for many customers can and do switch from fixed to mobile, and this trend is something that we need to closely monitor in the coming years. The changes in the telecommunications sector over the last decade, since competition reforms were implemented, translates to increased choice, more products and lower prices for consumers. As part of its statutory requirements, the ACCC must report yearly on changes in prices for fixed and mobile voice services. In the 10 years to 2006-07, the average price for a basket of fixed voice services used both for residential and business customers has fallen by over 26% in real terms. The overall average price for mobile services has fallen by about 42% during that same time. The ACCC does not currently monitor internet prices, but I note the Internet Industry Association conducts regular surveys and recently observed that the best value monthly cost of taking a 2 gigabyte per month ADSL 2 Plus service has nearly halved for many consumers in the last 18 months. There's not always direct price competition, so the association noted that generally download caps have continued to lift, as with the development of other options such as peak and off-peak download times. And all this has happened notwithstanding the start of the NBN process and the uncertainty that this transition will inevitably cause. Well, turning now to the NBN process, and we all know, I think, there was a key 2007 election, federal election commitment, but the debate surrounding the construction of a national optical fibre network has been a major issue for the Australian telecommunications sector over the last few years. I think we all know that the government issued its request for a proposal, and there were certain requirements, fibre to the node or fibre to the premises architecture using ADSL or VDSL or any other technology. And I think one development that's happened is that there's a recognition that fibre to the node might actually mean, in some areas, the efficient approach would be to use a wireless tail rather than the copper tail. Availability to 98% homes, 12 megabits per second, uniform and affordable retail pricing to all consumers, and open access arrangements. In relation to the last point, the government has taken the view that if a party intends to supply both wholesale and retail services, it should demonstrate what structural measures or models should be in place to prevent self-preferential treatment. Now, I don't want to comment on the specific proposals, but I note that structural issues have been a pretty popular topic throughout the year. Indeed, the ACCC was asked for its views on the current operational separation regime when it appeared at the set of estimates in June this year. And specifically, we were asked if the current operational separation regime that applies to Australia, to Telstra, is an effective mechanism for promoting equivalence between Telstra and its competitors. And the chairman of the ACCC said this, and the short answer is probably no. We continue to receive complaints of conduct that suggests that the objective of equivalence, which was the objective of the regime, is not being achieved. There have been some instances of conduct since the regime's inception, which, while it is not clear that they breached the operational separation plan, do not promote the objective of equivalence, which was the fundamental objective of the plan in the first place. In relation to the other objective of transparency, there is some additional reporting that the regime provides. However, this has been of limited benefit and is a highly aggregated level. I guess, in summary, we'd have to say that the regime is fundamentally unduly complex. There's a lot of discretion left to Telstra. There are limited self-regulatory mechanisms and unduly convoluted processes to implement any corrective action if a problem is identified. Otherwise, I think Graham thought it was a pretty good scheme. And I think that comment is one of the most recent reflections of the ACCC's publicly expressed concerns about current operational separations arrangements and some of those in a range of publications we've issued already. The Commission is currently undertaking a process of looking at proposals and will be reporting to the expert panel by the end of January next year. Without a doubt, any rollout of the NBN will require an evolution in telecommunications regulation in Australia. Australia's size and demography present particular challenges in the development of a national broadband network and will continue to be important considerations in the way we have to regulate telecommunications services. Just to quickly conclude, I guess what I've done is outlined what I think is quite rapid development in telecommunications and communication services in Australia, particularly in relation to data and broadband. The NBN process and development of the network provides an opportunity to build on those developments. But it's important that whatever we settle on, whatever we do, does indeed enhance competition and enhance the offer of the price and service offerings available to consumers and businesses alike. Just before I go, I need to comment on something that Professor Eisenmack said about a recent ACCC decision. And this is on the Telstra exemption application in relation to Optus's HFC network. What they were seeking to do was to exclude Telstra from access to unbundled local loop services so that it would be forced, in effect, to utilise its existing HFC network within that footprint. There are two reasons why we didn't grant that exemption, or we're not proposing to grant that exemption, and they are this. One, it's a bad precedent, I think, to single out one firm because it's rolled out a particular network in an exemption application. But more fundamentally, the viability of Optus in investing further in that network, in our view, depends pretty critically on the fact that it's not the dominant pay TV provider in Australia. Throughout the world, cable competition has relied on, at least the first instance, the incumbent cable company being the pay TV provider, and I think that changes the economics of that proposition fundamentally. So I think in answer to Professor Eisenach's question, well, what was the problem in that? I think it gets back to Michael Porter's proposition that the pay TV ownership by the incumbent telecommunications operator might be the fundamental problem in cable versus copper competition in Australia. Thanks very much.